Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday. Fantasy Sports Today, getting it going. Right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. Going to take you around the world of sports here for the next 3 hours. Myself, Kevin Walsh, talking about everything and anything under the sun. It's that time of year where we kind of bounce around from topic to topic simply because there is a lot going on. NBA Finals, talk about that in the third hour. Do some recaps of Major League Baseball, which happened yesterday, and talk about which players continue to be hot in the second hour. And then we will really kick it off with a story time, Kev. I'm going to tell a little story, and we'll tie it into how it's relevant.
Love it.
So I have a five-year-old son. He started T-ball just a few weeks ago, really. It's the first time he's ever played baseball in any kind of organized fashion. I play with him in the backyard. It's probably the sport I feel most comfortable coaching. People may know me on air as a little bit more of a football person than a baseball person, but that's okay. I played more baseball. I played baseball growing up, and I just feel comfortable coaching it to him. So he's fine. Like, he's pretty good. He's 5 and a half. He's not the biggest kid. He's not the best athlete. At this stage, it doesn't matter. It's all about having fun. And I teach him a certain way how to hit. It's how I taught. It's an easy way that I learned how to hit growing up, and he's pretty good in that particular skill set. So the T-ball, for those that have not gone through it yet and probably don't remember it, is an absolute cluster. It is the most disorganized thing I've ever been a part of. And it's when we first started the first practice, I was like, this is an absolute disaster. Everybody's going to get injured. We need to put some organization in place. And over time, it's gotten better. I'm there each time. I've been there each practice slash game to help out. The odd part of it is nobody can catch Kev at 5 years old. It's mostly five-year-olds. There's a couple six-year-olds, mostly five-year-olds. Nobody can catch. It's not a skill that 95% of them possess. It's just hand-eye coordination isn't there yet. It's like little kids can't do jumping jacks. Also something you probably don't know. It's like a developmental thing. They just can't do it. Take some time to do it. Anyway. So I helped. I put some drills in place. And the odd part is they have them like playing kind of a faux game. You know, they have the kids take the field and the players get up one after one and they hit off the tee, which is odd because you have some coaches saying things like hit the cutoff man, to which I say, you know, under my breath, dude, they can't catch. Why would a kid run out to the outfield, get the ball and try to hit a relay? There's no point in it. They literally cannot do it. So that's part of it. There's also like kids don't even really know how to run the bases, a lot of them. So I'm just trying to teach them that. Can you maybe stop a grounder? Can you maybe run around the bases in the correct way? If they can do that by the end of this season, I think it's a win. So there's one coach and he's great. His name's John. He's great guy. He's the head coach. And I put that in quotes because I don't think he cares. He's just there to help. You know, he's the guy that volunteered. He is the one that sets up at the plate, trying to get them to set up and make sure that they're hitting it off the tee as best as they can. And for Owen specifically, I've just thought slightly that he's setting him up a little off from the way I taught him how to do it. And Owen's been fine. Owen's my son, by the way. Owen's been fine, but he just can't. He hasn't been hitting it like I think that he can, and he does in the backyard and all that kind of stuff. I didn't know if it was nerves, but I really thought that he was setting him up wrong. So the other day in his second, we just go around the order twice. In his second at bat, I was like, John, do you mind if I step in? I'm just going to help Owen with this one. So I set Owen up. Look, just line your feet up here, put your hands here. I take a couple of steps back. I look at him. I'm like, all right. I just do a nice, easy motion. I was like, just swing, just how I taught you. And he hits an absolute laser off the tee. A laser. The hardest ball he has ever hit in his life. Right into the chest of the kid standing near the pitcher's mound. I mean, hits him hard. The hardest ball he's ever hit, it hits the kid in the chest. The whole place gasps. The kid is in tears. He runs over to his mom. Owen is confused, and we just tell him to go to first base. We have to go check on the other kid. Ultimately, he's fine. Shaken up, it probably hurt. Honestly, if anybody got hit with that, it would have hurt. I'm glad it didn't hit him in the face, and it's all good. So that is the story of Owen's first hit. How is this relevant to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Well, Clay Matthews was playing softball yesterday in a charity game. And he got drilled with a line drive in the face. And it broke his nose. He apparently was pouring blood, had to shield his face from pouring blood onto the field. And now he needs the swelling to go down in order to have surgery and repair his broken nose. Of all the things that Clay Matthews could have expected when he signed up for a charity softball game, I would say this is really low down on the list. So I don't criticize anyone in the T-ball situation. Accidents happen. I think my son understands it. I don't know if that kid is ever going to play baseball again because that was a rough thing to happen. But I can guarantee you Clay Matthews never plays charity softball again while he's an active NFL player.
That was lovely. I had no idea where we were going with that. That worked out nice. I bet the Packers are... You know, it's funny. The Eagles just had a massive charity softball game set up by the Carson Wentz's Foundation. And luckily, nobody had to take a softball off the face and break a nose. But I'm assuming the Packers then would... I always feel like certain things like this then do... Like, does the organization have to be like, all right, no more charity softball? Or do you look at it as like, isolated incident, wow, this is unfortunate, but whatever.
They've probably played a million charity softball games and events and all that kind of stuff. That's probably not the thing you would expect to happen. I think the thing you'd be worrying about is like, somebody rolling an ankle, because in the moment, like, and I'm watching the video again, like, it was he was paying attention. He was pitching. So, you know, in my T-ball situation, part of the reason it happened, the kid wasn't paying attention, which I'm not critical of him. He's 5 years old. It's not, a lot of the kids aren't paying attention. And you got to make sure that the kid that is standing closest to the plate is the kid that can maybe field one. But honestly, if Owen was out there and he was on the pitcher's mound and the ball got hit like that, even if he was paying attention, it could have hit him because it was a rocket. It was amazing. It was an amazing hit by a five-year-old. But so in Clay Matthews' situation, he was paying attention. Like, I don't think he would have expected that would have happened. And they probably played a million charity softball games and basketball games and the like. They're probably more worried about somebody rolling an ankle, tearing an ACL, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Have you seen the videos of Joel Embiid playing park basketball in...
I haven't.
In Philly? Oh, I'll see if I can send you a couple. Yeah, I got the one right here.
Dominating? Is he joking around?
No, he is... He's embarrassing kids. The video I'm going to send you, he throws it off a kid's head, windmill dunks. It is kind of one of those things where, I mean, we obviously know how good Joel Embiid is, but then he's out there with just like regular people, and it's like, all right, well, that's a little unfair. But it's like, of all athletes, like, I'm sure this is the last thing the 76ers really would like Joel Embiid to be doing. I'm surprised one of the Colangelos didn't hop on a burner account to tweet about the how unnecessary it is for him to be out there. But I mean, these are, I mean, they're unfortunate things. They're, I guess they're risks. I do think one of the things that I found interesting, like, is how the sentiment around the Clay Matthews situation, where everyone was just kind of like, that could have been a lot worse. Like, he has a broken nose, and he tweeted out Ian Rappaport when he sent out the report, was just like, that could have been a lot worse. So, I mean,
yeah.
I appreciate that they see the bright side, I guess, in what is a pretty poor situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's a charity softball game. You don't want to have you certainly don't want to have a negative coming out of it. They've been hosting this game annually at the home of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, a minor league affiliate of the Brewers. It's been hosted by Brett Favre, Donald Driver, and Jordy Nelson over the years, and Matthews and Devontae Adams took over as co-hosts this year. So you don't really want that to be the item coming out of this. So hopefully they raised a lot of money. And as you said, all in all, it's pretty lucky what happened, simply because, you know, if it hit him in the eye or something like that, you're talking about an actual serious injury. I think many, many football players have broken their noses and been fine. It sucks that he has to have surgery, but it is what it is. You know, you've got to figure it's, you know, he's fine for training camp, you know, in July. That's 6 weeks from now, basically. So you got to figure maybe 7 weeks. You got to figure that'll be all right. A broken nose, surgery, that's what, a month recovery time to be all good and not have to worry about it.
The Packers do need him to be all good, though, because I remember throughout the draft, a lot of people knew that they were going to try to address corner, but a lot of people also felt that edge rusher was a big need for this team. And, you know, they doubled down on corner with their first two picks, and they had like 14 picks or something like that. Like, they drafted, I think, a long snapper, a punter. They drafted a bunch of wide receivers, so they didn't really go all the way in on addressing the edge position, at least throughout the draft. So they need someone like Clay Matthews to be ready to go. So yeah, you would have to hope that whatever the best case scenario, the soonest he could be back is what they need really from Clay.
Yeah, I mean, they drafted three wide receivers later in the draft: Marquez Valdez Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown, Jamon Moore. That's fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds. They also drafted offensive lineman Cole Madison in the fifth round. And then we're looking on the defensive side of the ball. They went Jair Alexander, corner, in the first round. Josh Jackson, corner, in the second round. Oren Burks, middle linebacker, third round. And then the other receivers that I mentioned, and then James Looney, a nose tackle, in the seventh round. You're right, they did draft a long snapper in the seventh round, and they drafted a punter in the fifth round. So they drafted their biggest need early, which was the two corners. And I actually think that was sort of a home run.
Mm.
They ended up with Alexander and Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson was bandied about as being a first-round pick. They end up getting him in the second round, and Alexander in the first. You know, those are going to be their future corners for as long as they can get it. They've been really miserable on covering outside the hash marks for a long time. And you can remember famously a couple of years ago in that NFC Championship game, like, they just got, well, first of all, in the playoff game against Dallas, this is 2 years ago, the playoff game against Dallas, which I was at, actually, they got scorched by Dez Bryant, and they ended up winning that game in kind of miraculous fashion with Mason Crosby hitting 250-yarders in the last couple of minutes of the game. And then they went to the Falcons the next week and they got annihilated. Like, it's just Julio Jones went off on them. So so there you go. So there's the Packers.
Wow.
As far as my son's T-ball career, I think he'll keep going. But it was a confusing situation for him, because this good thing turned into he didn't really know what to make of it in the moment. So we just had to, you know, talk to him and say, you did great. And sometimes these things happen. There's nothing you can do about it. And he's fine. You know, luckily the kid didn't end up with a bloody nose or anything like that.
I remember when I was playing, oh man, maybe fifth grade, sixth grade baseball. It could have been seventh. I don't remember. But it was one of the, you know, it was practice. We were doing a scrimmage. I was pitching. And, you know, delivered to the plate. It came right back at me. And it was coming directly for my face. And I caught it. Not because I am some supreme athlete, although I am a supreme athlete. I was just trying to block my face.
You look like it.
And I just got super lucky that there was a glove on the hand that which I was trying to cover my face with. That was just one of those moments that always, like, from the time that I played baseball, that just stood out to me. Because it was just, I was not at all trying to catch it. Because it's one of those things where people are like, whoa, what a play. And I'm like, what? I'm just happy
just
that didn't
protect your face.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, I had a very similar thing happen. I was in the third grade. I could tell you the name of the guy. His name is Dave. I'm still in contact with him on social media today. He was the biggest kid at the time, and I threw a pitch right down the middle, comebacker. I just put my glove up to protect my face, and I looked up the cloud of dirt around me. Looked up and my team was going nuts. My coach was like, thank God you did that, because if it hit you in the face, we'd be in the hospital right now. I just remember him vividly saying that. So anyway,
I have another baseball.
I just figured I'd try a little personal stuff into the NFL and hopefully T-ball continues to improve and nobody gets injured from here on out, because it is literally the only thing you worry about.
Yeah.
At T-ball, you can't worry about anything else, because if you see how disorganized it is because the kids don't know anything, you realize that if we just get out of here without anybody getting hurt, it's a win. Unfortunately, that did not happen on Thursday. So
you worry about that and hitting the cutoff man.
Dude, I was so angry about it, and now I'm with weeks. Weeks haven't gone by, it's water under the bridge, but I was very angry about it when people were telling kids to hit the cutoff man when they can't even run around the bases in the right direction. So we're going to talk more football. Kev's got a whole bunch of questions for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you something I'm going to ask you a question that happened in my league just yesterday, my big dynasty league that I competed with Mike Florio from FNTSY. So it's Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network for the next 3 hours. Come back and join us right after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
We're back on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Rocking out on a Sunday.
It's Motorhead.
No coffee house music for us. We are rocking out. A little punk. I went to a go ahead.
I was just going to say, I only know it's Motorhead, assuming I'm correct, because they sing Triple H's theme song, wrestling stuff. You're correct.
Yeah, there you go. So, Rob Bowe. That's Rob Bowe, producer extraordinaire. Recent graduate of Iona College. We're very proud of him. Bachelor of Arts in Mass Communication. Just expert producing right there. Professional and educated and the whole thing. So maybe we'll talk to him later. I don't know. Maybe we'll talk to him about graduation. We'll do a whole segment on what that was like. Graduation day is not always as fun as it seems. Like, you're proud of yourself, but you're also, in some instances, not me, obviously, extremely hungover on a blazing football field. So I've heard other people.
This sounds like
talk
a vivid memory.
Terrible experience. I mean, it's not my memory, obviously, but I'm in this dynasty league, and it is with it's an all industry dynasty league. It is 32 teams. There's two 16 team conferences, 45-man rosters, the whole thing. I think I've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. I certainly have talked about this before with you. Mike Florio just joined the league this past year. He took it over from Corey Parson. So there were some rule changes bandied about.
Man.
One was instituted in so far as getting rid of kickers. Now, this is the seventh year of this league, which is a really good run. Like, it's a long-term dynasty league. So a lot of guys have been in it from the beginning. And 7 years in, we just decide a lot of industry people are kind of getting rid of kickers in a lot of leagues. And this was put to a vote and instituted, and the commissioner dropped everybody's kicker yesterday. After this is done, somebody who has been on the show many times, Gary Davenport, explained to everybody, and he's got a point, and so I want to see what your thoughts are. He said, it's all well and good to get rid of kickers, but this cannot happen after the league year starts, which effectively is the second a player gets drafted in the rookie draft. So he's saying, and there's another rule change potentially going to happen. So his thought process is, I don't mind getting rid of the kickers, but you can't do it after we already started the league year. We got to vote on these things, say, is everybody good with this, or is the majority good with this, and then move on. Now, kickers in this instance may not have a really huge – it doesn't really have a huge impact on this league because it's one of the 20 players that you start each week. But I don't care about the kickers. I think I even voted to get rid of them because, you know, why not? It's just one less thing we have to worry about in a complicated league. But what are your thoughts? Should it just wait until next year to institute the rule change, or are you okay with that happening after the draft?
Logically, I think that makes sense, right? Like, when the league year starts, you shouldn't be able to alter things. The question I would have is, because is how much of a change, or is there of any change, would removing kickers make? Like, obviously, right, if Gary said this, then he must feel as if it would make a significant of enough impact to where it needed to be decided before the draft. Maybe he doesn't want the precedent set, right? Because, I mean, if you have a dynasty league going on for 7 years, that means you care about it, right? So that means that you can still plan ahead. And if you allow, and it might sound like petty stuff or silly stuff, but honestly, if you allow people to have, you know, and that still is a drastic rule change, like eliminating a position, regardless how most people seem to feel about kickers in fantasy, or at least the growing feeling around kickers. If you set that precedent where everyone is saying, if you need to make any rule changes, it needs to come before the league year, that is a good precedent to have in a league. So, I mean, for an outsider, I think that if everybody could agree, in an ideal world, we need to make sure we have all of this stuff sorted before the league year, but this won't be... this won't hurt anybody. This is a good thing because a lot of people really, I think, have grown tired of kickers determining so much. Who was the kicker that was, I think, on the most? It was the Rams kicker, I think, was the most owned player on championship rosters. Or
Zuerlein.
Yeah, you can't have that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like that. Like Greg Zuerlein should not be determining who's winning fantasy championships. Or maybe it was just on like playoff rosters or whatever, because I know he got hurt at one point late down in the year. So I think getting rid of kickers is fine, but I think the point perhaps, and this is me kind of just assuming maybe why, you know, if that is he's worried about setting the precedent, then I think I would agree with what GDP is saying.
Yeah, I think he's absolutely right. I'm not going to put up a fight about it on the kickers just because it was overwhelmingly voted in our conference 13-2 in favor of changing it. And the poll, I can't remember. I think he posted the poll after the draft was done. And that was the one he did a few weeks back. But the other things, I think you just push it until next year. My compromise is, let's just keep the kickers out and make all the other changes until next year. But he's right. Theoretically, I think you should just do all your rule changes in your keeper leagues and all that kind of stuff. It's got to happen before the draft starts.
Absolutely.
You know, if the commissioner made a mistake on scoring and nobody realized it and you change it after the draft, maybe there's a situation. You know, this isn't an absolute. rule, but I'd say in general, you need to have those changes made before your draft, baseball, football, basketball, whatever. So, yeah, it's a deal. I'm probably going to have Gary Davenport on here in the next week or so, and hopefully Scott Fish, too, in order to talk about various leagues and obviously incoming players and projections for the fantasy year. We actually talked about yesterday the Giants a little bit, and I got us involved in a little bit of a Twitter, not a spat, but a Twitter conversation, because it ironically, it was the thing that we talked about yesterday in terms of Eli and the Giants offense. 31st in points scored last year, but Michael Salfino writes for the New York Times, writes for 538, I believe, as well. So he's got some, he's a longtime fantasy baseball, football guy. He has a real problem with the way that Eli is currently ranked, simply because I'm going to Fantasy Pros right now. Eli is currently ranked 23rd overall amongst quarterbacks. The problem is that Saquon Barkley currently, I'm just going to standard scoring right now, is ranked number 7. Odell amongst running backs. Odell Beckham is currently ranked 3rd amongst wide receivers. We talked about Sterling Shepard yesterday, and he is currently ranked 43rd. So, and let me go to Evan Engram, who I believe we said yesterday was top 6. So Michael Salfino, in a really well-placed logical tweet, Evan Engram is the 4th ranked tight end. How do you have the 7th ranked running back, the 3rd ranked wide receiver, the 4th ranked tight end, another ancillary piece of that offense, who is obviously draftable as the 43rd wide receiver in any size league? How is Eli the 23rd ranked quarterback? How can you justify that ranking? Because you think Eli stinks, but the offense is going to be fine because these guys are all going to be top 7 fantasy point earners. It doesn't compute. So I'm kind of with him. I actually don't expect Eli to fall off a cliff. I think 23rd is far too low. I think Eli will probably end up being around where he's been in other years, you know, 15 or so, just in the QB2 conversation. You know, when you're talking about 23 in 2 QB leagues, he's barely getting drafted.
I feel like Mike Salfino might be a listener of the program, because the argument that which he laid out sounded quite similar to what we were saying yesterday. I mean, that, it just...
Yeah, it was ironic. Yeah, I actually don't think... It was a little tangential, so I don't... he may, but I think it was a little tangential because it doesn't make sense. According to his logic, he's right. It doesn't really make sense for people to do that. He brought up some historical situations as well. He can't ever remember that happening.
Well, it's not even just his. It's just anyone's logic. I remember last year, it had to do with Kirk Cousins, where I think his top 4 options were all gone within like the first 5 rounds. It was like Jordan Reed, Crowder. I can't even remember at this point, but all those guys were going so early. And it's like, why is Kirk Cousins not going a little bit higher then? It's just, if everybody's going to be all the way in on all of these Giants pieces, then what is it that would hold you back from Eli Manning? And you could say, oh, well, he's been really, really poor these last 2 years. Well, some of that comes from the fact that the offensive line was abysmal, maybe the worst in football, or bottom 5 at least. Ben McAdoo, rather, was completely lost as a head coach. And at the end of the day, it was not as talented on the outside, because it really was Odell Beckham and Odell Beckham only. And last year, what they had injury-wise, I mean, not only was that offensive line putrid, and not only did McAdoo not have
wide receivers.
Single... There was one game where I think they lost their top 4 wide receivers in one game, where Odell, Shepard, Brandon Marshall, and I think it was Dwayne Harris went down as well. Like, wide receiver 5 became wide receiver 1 for this team. So
Roger Lewis was the man.
So, I mean, if we're just going to use logic here, if if we're going to have Saquon in PPR leagues be a first-round pick, and Odell Beckham's going to be one of the first three wide receivers, and Sterling Shepard is going to be a flex option, and Evan Ingram, people are going to draft with the upper echelon tight ends some in some spots ahead of a Jimmy Graham, then we have to just logically say, okay, that means that Eli Manning is closer to QB1 than undraftable.
A quarterback,
not QB1 overall. I don't want people to think that I'm saying Eli is.
Yes. So that's it. I mean, I think the logic he laid out makes a lot of sense to me. It's sort of what we talked about yesterday. He said he wrote at 5:38 before the draft that Eli was worse relative to league and key adjusted stats than 1975 Joe Namath, who's playing on zero legs. So I think Eli being crushed in projections, even projecting a benching, is fine. So just do that. You know, if Eli is 23rd because people think, well, he's only going to play six games before they yank him for Davis Webb, then that's okay, but that usually doesn't bear out. You're usually taking Eli out of the equation altogether. But that being said, you know, if I'm going to dive into the Eli thing here on Fantasy Pros, he's at 23rd, but I'll bet there's plenty of people that have him behind that. You know, there's got to be some experts that have Eli clearly outside the QB2 conversation. I'm looking, yeah. So some people have him ranked as low as 27th, which means those people have to be suspecting that Eli isn't going to make it through the year.
But the thing,
that's the only way you can really come up with that.
If that is your projection, right? If Eli gets benched, then you have to be lower on all of these Giants weapons. Like, those guys cannot produce at the level that which people are projecting, and Eli Manning gets benched. It is not a plausible outcome. And that's fine if you feel like Odell comes off slow. Evan Ingram maybe was a fluke. Shepard won't be as good as some people think, and Saquon Barkley's going to maybe struggle to adapt to the NFL, and the offensive line is not as good as people are thinking that it got better. If that's your take, then fine. But that has to be your take if you're expecting Eli Manning to get benched. That's the only way that all of a sudden they go to Davis Webb, unless there would be an injury.
Obviously, if Eli played badly, Pat Shurmur is going to have to take a look at his options. But he was able to get it done with Case Keenum last year, who ended up being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He was 13th. That's right, 13th in QB rankings last year by the end of the year. And that's without him having started every game. You know, he clearly, over the course of the last 10 games or so, Case Keenum was a startable option. He didn't play in game one. I think he came in the Pittsburgh game. And then from there on out, he was starting. So I do think that Eli's going to be fine. I think you put him in the middle of that QB2 conversation, you're all good. Is he, you know, Mike Salfino on Twitter was making comparisons to Matt Ryan back in 2016, and I'll say, like, I was banging the drum for Matt Ryan, as was George Kurtz, all during that offseason. I just thought that Matt Ryan being QB 18 or 19 was a huge overcompensation to him having a bad 2015 when he had 21 touchdowns. He ended up winning the MVP. Obviously, I didn't expect that, but I thought Matt Ryan was a QB1, and the industry had him as a late QB2. I just never understood, or mid to late QB2. I just didn't understand that.
Who were some of the guys going ahead of Eli on Fantasy Pros ADP wise, just like the maybe the front
right,
five guys
right above him. Right above him is Mitch Trubisky, Derek Carr, Alex Smith. Right behind him is Bortles, Keenum, and Dalton. So,
I mean,
which is, you know, those are rough options there.
Not to take us down a rabbit hole, as I know we're approaching break, but I'd love to discuss the Derek Carr and that situation, because It's a really, really interesting spot. Bringing in Jordy Nelson, bringing in Mark Davis Bryant. Derek Carr has all this talent in the world, but seems to just want to check down everything. Their head coach has not coached in this league in 10 years. There are times I see Derek Carr and see where he's getting drafted, and I'm like, how is that the case? And then there are times like, I'm not touching him. I want nothing to do with that. It is an incredibly interesting situation where I feel like you're going to get a lot of people perhaps on extremes of either end.
Well, think about this, too. If Derek Carr this year ends up, I know it's fantasy, but if he ends up with 21st, as is projected right now by these experts on average, if he ends up 21st, how are the Raiders going to look? Do you know what I mean? Like, what are his stats going to look like if Derek Carr is putting up, I don't know, 4,000 yards and 20 touchdowns and 12 interceptions or something like that? You know, even look at, let me see what his stats were a year ago. Yeah, 3,500 yards, 22 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. That's in 15 games played. I mean, he didn't miss a ton of time. That's brutal. That's why the team had a really bad season. That's a big part of it. Amari Cooper was invisible for months. So we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit about Derek Carr, projections there. Kevin's got a whole bunch of questions to talk about and to answer. So it's Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're back after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back, Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike Blewett, Kevin Walsh. So hopefully you found us via the Fantasy Sports Radio app, but if you haven't, you can obviously find us. Maybe you're listening on TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country. Thank you. If you want to give us a call today, please do at 844-843-6879 and hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio if you want to join the discussion, at Mike Blewett, at the Kevin Walsh. So we were talking a little bit about Derek Carr before the break, and you're sort of wondering whether or not Derek Carr is going to get it done this year with the change of the coach and all that kind of stuff. Now, clearly, I didn't think Jack Del Rio did a bad job in his tenure, but it seemed like he had kind of lost the locker room. He had a quarterback that regressed. I think the single biggest crime for an NFL coach, any NFL coach, is if your quarterback regresses in some way. We saw it last year, obviously, with both Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota. Despite the fact that the Titans made the playoffs, they just were not comfortable with the way Mike Mularkey had shepherded Mariota through these last couple of seasons, and they moved on. They clearly weren't comfortable with Del Rio, the Del Rio Derek Carr marriage, and they moved on there. I am on record as saying that I don't think this John Gruden experiment is going to work. I think they just hired a name, flashy hire. I think he can be a rah-rah guy, come in, maybe get a little bit of juice out of them, but I just don't know overall if this team is talented enough to keep going back to the playoffs every year. As far as Derek Carr is concerned, Kevin, he is a very curious case because they're all in on him, right? They gave him the long-term deal. He is locked in as the QB. But over his first four seasons, he has improved. He did improve year over year from the first to the second to the third year. But last year, his average yards per attempt dropped by a full yard from 7.5 in 2016 to 6.5 in 2017, to your point about him maybe not looking downfield. Now, was that a result of Amari Cooper kind of being invisible? How are the two married to one another? I don't know. It's hard to say. was Amari Cooper just having a terrible year, or was Derek Carr having a poor year massively impacting Amari Cooper's year? When you look at Amari Cooper last year, 48 catches for 680 yards and 7 touchdowns. That is all. That is him as a 23-year-old. He was the first, I think he was the youngest player ever to have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. It was all before he was 23 years old. And then last, and I had high expectations for him. Amari Cooper was the single biggest problem with my fantasy teams last year. I drafted him a lot, and it clearly didn't work out. It didn't work out so badly that I benched him for that one huge game that he had, the 11-catch, 210-yard, 2-touchdown game. It's like a 50-point fantasy game, and I benched him in one league. And in another league, I played him, and I still lost. It was a very weird week. I had played against Amari one time, won that one, and played him on my teams both times. I benched him in one. I lost that one, and I played him in another. And I lost that one. So it was a very weird week. But in any event, most of his production was really in that one week. Of the 7 touchdowns, 2 of them came there. Of the 680 yards, 210 came there. And 11 of the 48 catches. I mean, outside of week 1, week 7, and week 6, week 16, Amari was basically unownable. 1 catch, 0 catches, 3 catches, 4 catches, 1 catch, 2 catch, 1 catch. He was unownable. So was that Derek Carr's fault or Amari Cooper's fault?
I mean, they probably go hand in hand. The thing is, Derek Carr is giving you the third highest cap hit amongst quarterbacks this year. So there is a certain level that he would need to play at to kind of pay off the money that he is going to be given. And when you think about what's around him, I mean, maybe the offensive line is taking a bit of a dip, but I know going into last year and the year before that, certainly, it was one of the most heralded offensive lines in all of football. And I think someone explained Derek Carr in a way that I loved. It was kind of a Brett Favre skill set with an Alex Smith mindset, where, and there were times when he would just let it loose and it would work. And you saw it, but it seemed like he wouldn't do it consistently enough. And I think about the three wide receivers that he has, his three main guys. And, I mean, off the top of my head, how many teams have a better 1-2-3 at wide receiver? I mean, I'm struggling off the top of my head. I know the Falcons have Julio, Calvin Ridley, and Mohamed Sanu. That one jumps out to me. I don't know if there are a couple others maybe on the top of your head. But there's a lot of talent there. There's also a lot of big playability there. I mean, you know firsthand what Martavis Bryant can do. Jordy Nelson, although it seems as if a lot of that success was tied to Aaron Rodgers, but he was always able to create big plays. And so was Amari Cooper. So I just feel like there's no reason for Derek Carr to not be putting up big-time numbers. The pieces are there, and the talent is there. So if it doesn't come through, it's how often are we going to be able to blame the offensive coordinator or blame Amari Cooper for drops? Like, there's going to come a point where I think the onus will turn around, and you know, we might have to evaluate if what Derek Carr is doing on the field.
I agree. And I remember having this conversation with our my good friend and former colleague Tony Sincotta, where he said he wouldn't be surprised in a couple of years if Derek Carr wasn't starting quarterback for the Raiders. And you just wonder how long the leash is. If he has another year, like say he repeats kind of his performance of 2017, you just wonder what the Raiders start to look at. You know, it's probably Gruden's actually going to be probably the huge decision maker there. You know, it's such a dramatic drop off, right? In 2015, 32 touchdowns, 13 picks. 2016, 28 touchdowns, but 6 picks. I mean, it's incredible ball security and did a really great job. That's why he went 12-3. And then 22-13 last year. A huge regression, you know? From the year before. So I sort of agree with Tony. Like I have never been on the Derek Carr bandwagon. I think that's really the point I should be making. I think he's fine, but do I think he's an elite quarterback and that he's going to be a top five QB someday? I don't see that personally. It doesn't mean you have to have a top five QB to win. I think Carson Wentz is really good, but I wouldn't have crowned him as a top five quarterback in the NFL. Now he's putting up huge fantasy stats, but I think Carson Wentz can continue to prove it to me. I think I'm already eliminating Derek Carr from that conversation. Does that make sense? Like, I think Carson Wentz's potential is greater than Derek Carr's.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree with that because I think the mobility of the two isn't even close, assuming Carson Wentz still has that within his game coming off of the ACL. The thing with Derek Carr, though,
I don't even care
about
that, though. I don't even need him to have that. I just need him to be accurate.
No, yeah, but I'm saying it's a whole nother level, I think, that ability to create magic in the pocket. My point, though, more with Derek Carr, he is someone, I think, who had that potential. Like, the part of the reason that 2016 season was so special is he had a lot of these come-from-behind wins. But you would look at it, and in the crunch time, they would move the ball with such ease because he was forced to take shots. I remember, I think it was the game against the Bucks. He had a massive game. It went to overtime. I know he threw at least four touchdowns that year. It was just... But they were way better, and they were able to move the ball with such ease. It's like, why couldn't you have put this team away a bit sooner? And I think it is a big year for Derek Carr to kind of piece a lot of this together. He's probably in a spot.
It's his fifth season. It's a really big year. Like, he has to get back to 2016, or the Raiders would be irresponsible if they didn't look at other options.
I mean, the thing, though, is, right, Derek Carr, if he gave you a repeat of what he did last year, odds are, if this team struggles, it would then still fall. Those are passable numbers. 62% completion, about 63, 22 touchdowns to 13 interceptions, and 3,500 yards. They're passable numbers. Now, for his contract, they're not. But if this team were to have a really, really down year, people are going to point to Gruden being on the sideline for the first time in 10 years. So it seems to be, too, that there are people ahead of him who are going to be taking this blame. I wouldn't be shocked if then they moved to Vegas and then he got another pass because that's tough when you have to move cities. Like, there seems to perhaps
that's what I'm saying. Like, they're stuck now.
Shouldn't. I don't think that
they're better or different.
To me, though, I am. It is. I don't know if surprising. It's more so frustrating to view the Raiders situation as stuck with Derek Carr because I think the talent is there. Top five might be lofty, but a top 10 quarterback, the talent is there for that. It's him just being aggressive enough. And I look at the wide receivers he has now, and I feel like he almost has no choice. Like, probably part of the reason that Crabtree was at times just comfortably better than Amari Cooper within the offense is he was a little bit more polished, and I think that he allowed Derek Carr to be a little bit safer with the football. So if you look again at these three wide receivers that the Raiders have, hopefully it forces Carr's hand to be a more aggressive quarterback, because I do think he would reap the benefits of that style of play.
So the Raiders over-under for the year. Let's do that. Hang on. 9.5. Minus 130 on the under. So not an expensive bet. So what are your thoughts on that? -130, 9.5 Raiders over under.
As of today, I think I would take the under. As of today, I might think that they're the team I would predict to finish last in that division. I mean, it's a really, really strong division.
The Chargers are 9. The Broncos are 7.5, and the Chiefs are 8. So, according to Vegas, the Raiders are going to win that division.
Does that feel right to you? I know part of it is.
I actually think it's the most difficult division for me this year to figure out because there's so much change happening. New quarterback in Denver. Mm-hmm. New quarterback in Kansas City. Los Angeles. It's actually the most stable of the bunch. And then the Raiders were the brand new coach and all that kind of stuff.
The Chargers have like 9 more season-ending injuries, though, to come before we even get to July.
So true. Them and the Ravens are just going to – they're going to be out by the end of September because they're going to lose 7 guys to ACL injuries. So,
unreal.
So there you go. I think it's a tough one. And I think in future weeks we'll start to break down these divisions. We'll go team by team, and I think that's always the easiest way to do it. So we'll get that started next Saturday, talk about why don't we do that? We'll start it off with the AFC West next Saturday.
I like that.
We just kind of walked into this discussion. We didn't plan for it. So There you go. I know you had a bunch of questions for me, and we only got a few minutes left, so why don't you fire them, kind of rapid fire at me.
Yeah, sure. I'll rapid fire then a couple of the either-or questions that I had labeled. One of them yesterday that I saw, and part of it actually was inspired by a conversation I saw you having with Gary Davenport actually on Twitter around Jerick McKinnon. And I just saw his name next to a running back that a lot of people were hyped on last year, which was Joe Mixon. And, I mean, as of today, McKinnon or Mixon, I personally just – I was like, you probably could convince me of either-or. I think I would lean McKinnon. I could see me end up being one of the guys that you and Gary find insufferable because I'm going to trust Kyle Shanahan maybe to get a lot out of McKinnon. But if I offered you those two, who do you think you'd be more inclined to take?
That is a good question. Let me just see. I'm just checking real quick where they're going from an ADP standpoint. Give me a second. The reason I was out on Joe Mixon last year is because I thought people were way too hyped about a talented running back who clearly was going to be behind a bad offensive line. I thought it was very apparent to me that they were going to struggle to run the ball at all, as it was with the Giants and the Seahawks last year. I just thought that. Joe Mixon right now is 16th ADP, according to Fantasy Pros, ranked. I shouldn't say ADP because this is really based on rankings. This isn't based on drafts that have happened. And McKinnon is 14th. I think they're both really talented. But if I had to pick one guy that could withstand the load of 250 touches plus in a given season, I would pick Mixon over McKinnon, me personally. Now, they had to overhaul the offensive line again in Cincinnati. So they got Cordy Glenn. They traded for him from Buffalo. They got Billy Price, center, in the first round. So there's two changes, at least, to the offensive line. In fact, there's a third one that I'm looking at now. Cedric Ogbuehe, who was a first-round pick in 2015, right now, according to the depth chart I'm looking at, is a backup. Maybe they move him over to right guard or right tackle at some point. We shall see. But so I still have some questions there. As far as McKinnon is concerned, like, does Jimmy Garoppolo – oh, by the way, there's a tangential story. Cassius March, who is now on the Niners, former Seahawk, former Patriot. They basically cut him midseason. He's been dishing on his experience in New England and said they don't have any fun there. I'm really glad I'm not a part of it. A lot of people are laughing at him because they said, oh, you're not there to have fun. You're there to win. But he's just talking about his perspective. He was really kind of miserable playing there. And he also said that Jimmy Garoppolo absolutely shredded the defense every time in practice. So he's excited to be playing for him. But it's just more insight as to if Garoppolo is doing something like that, why would the Patriots trade him, right?
You can
see why Belichick maybe, probably, didn't want to deal him, but was just told to do so.
I really do think that Belichick wanted Garoppolo there. And I do think stories like this, and I do think that divide is starting to grow further and further apart between Brady and Belichick. And I think that Malcolm Butler situation made everything a lot worse from the Super Bowl. We saw Brady have his back publicly in that situation. It is really tough to say. I think he might be the greatest coach I've ever seen in all of professional sports. And obviously the system that he employs works wonders, obviously. It's one of the greatest dynasties in sports history, if not the greatest dynasty. I just wonder if maybe in 2018, I don't know, maybe things are different. Like, maybe the jig is up on Belichick. Maybe that type of stuff isn't going to work as easy as it once did. I don't know. I feel like stories like this are not doing them any favors.
Yeah. Agreed. So there you go. I think I would take Mixon over McKinnon, but I do like the fact that McKinnon has a good offensive line in front of him. They drafted Mike McGlinchey this year to solidify it. I think he's going to have a better offensive line than Mixon have. So they're ranked pretty close. I think that's where it should be, but the McKinnon hype is way too much. We come back. We're talking baseball in hour number two. Mike and Kevin back after this.